ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Jo Trilling, and this is Roots and Shoots, ABC Radio Perth's gardening podcast with new episodes twice a week. It's the gardening show for green thumbs and aspiring horticulturalists alike.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Hello, Jo. Nice to see you.
I love that you always bring in this array of plants. They are all natives, of course.
Oh, well, I'll tell you the truth. I've got some native, but I've got some exotic little water plants.
You're inspiring. Tell us what you've got. Tell us about the water plants, maybe.
Well, all of these here are edible. Well, they're called, there's a new term called edimental.
Edimental?
Yeah.
Did you coin it?
I can't dibs on it. So somebody in the UK was very flash. And so the trend at the moment is edible plants that are ornamental. So it's like a dual purpose kind of thing.
What, then you can just hang out in the garden and have a little snack if you get hungry?
Correct. And your garden looks pretty as well. It just doesn't look functional. So I bought a little selection of some natives and some water plants that are both edible and pretty.
Fantastic. I've got questions for you, Mark, about little critters in the garden. You're not an entomologist though, so I'm not sure that you are best placed to answer what kind of beetles they are. Of you, that they're stunningly beautiful.
I know, that is a pretty thing, and I think Daryl Hardy would be the one to comment.
Harlequin
on it.
Bugs, maybe Leone and Frio thinks they are.
No, definitely not harlequin. So it could be one of those little. There's quite a few different jewel beetles, and they usually congregate on flowers this time of the year. They feed on the pollen. Their larvae are borers, a lot of these jewel beetles, so they can be a bit destructive.
Not as destructive maybe as, what are the worms called? The army worms in the garden. Oh. I've got a question from somebody saying, what is the best way to get rid of them, Mark Tuchek? Have you got advice?
Well, army worms are rampant this time of the year because they love the hot weather. And usually they have a few cycles within the warm period. There's a few things you can use, but if you actually aerate your lawn,
So get a fork and then...
A big fork, you can stick it on the end of your feet, or you can get a big...
Hang on, stick it on the end of your feet. What do you mean? Like attach it to your shoes?
Yeah, you know, like there's big spikes you can actually get around with.
And then you just pound around on the grass.
It's a big workout because I've tried to do it before, but I gave up. I used a roller. And you get rollers, and they're evil-looking things because they've got big spikes in them. Or if you core your lawn, and what that does, it enables holes in your lawn, and that enables the birds to get it stuck into them. So the magpies will get into them and just get better access to these army worms. They do come up at night. There's a few sprays you can use. But
then if you've got pets and things like that, and then, of course, if they die and the birds eat them, not great. Okay, so aerate the lawn. Thank you very much.
Aerate the lawn and... even use a wetting agent because you change the environment for them and that can upset them.
Good on you. Mark Tuchek in to answer all your gardening questions. Good afternoon, Yvonne. You're in Trigg, I think.
Yes.
What's happening?
We've got an ornamental pear, Pyrus vetusia alfolia or something like that. And we've got lots of shoots coming up through the garden bed. And I'm just wondering what's the best way of getting rid of them.
Right.
You know, can you poison them or I don't want to impact the tree?
Yeah, that's the thing. So those ornamental pears are grafted and the bit on the bottom that they grafted onto is it's still a pyrus, it's still a pear, but it's usually grown for its root vigour. And if the plant becomes stressed, stress can be a few different things, stress could be... Yeah, the plant could have been injured or you could dig around it or even stress due to lack of water and things like that, then the plant reacts by sending out suckers from the actual tree itself. So are you sure it's coming from the pyrus? Have you dug around the bottom near it?
Haven't dug around. I mean, it's sort of next to the veggie garden. So, I mean, the veggie garden gets dug from time to time.
Right, okay.
It's actually sitting up in a high bed and then there's in a retaining wall area and then it also, like a metre down, further from the tree, also comes up in the lawn as well.
Oh, dear, yep. The unfortunate thing is once these plants start to sucker, it's very difficult to correct it, you know, or, you know, you can't reverse it because the plant thinks it's under attack, it's trying to survive. And poisoning them, because the suckers are actually connected to the tree itself.
It's going to impact the existing plant.
You can't poison
them. Oh, Yvonne, that's not great news.
So no great news, unfortunately. I can't do anything.
Yeah, okay. So we just keep chopping them off and as they come up.
Yeah, keep mowing them off and then you'll hardly notice them after a while.
Oh, good luck with that, Yvonne. Let's head to Coogee. Kerry, I think, has got a question to do with a citrus plant. Hi, Kerry.
Hi. Yes, I have oranges and something is chewing the skin. There's a photo there. There is a little bug you can see in the other photo, but what would it be? Any ideas, Mark?
Oh, okay. Are you sure? Is it on all the fruit or just some of them like that?
At least a half of them. Okay. Maybe on middle level, none down low. There's a lot there.
Okay. Lots. Is it very windy where you are, where the tree is?
No, I'm near the coast, but the tree's in the backyard.
Okay, they get some protection.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like, it looks a little bit like physical damage rather than something eating them.
It's impacting the skin, isn't it?
Is it just on the skin?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I would be interested if you cut one open and see if there's any kind of browning on the inside. Physical damage is usually when the fruit kind of bashing against each other or rubbing against something. So it looks a bit more like that. But have you seen bugs on them as well?
There's one bug there. He's got some orange on him. I sent a photo. We sort of two-thirds the way down, you can just see him. But the ones with white mark.
Okay.
It looks like a stink bug almost.
Yes, you're right. So that is a harlequin bug. Well, that's a crusader bug. So they've got this little cross on the back and they do attack the new growth on citrus, not so much the fruit, but they usually get on the new growth and suck away. It is a bad guy, but he wouldn't be doing the damage to the fruit. So there's nothing really you can do now that the fruit's damaged because it'll just end up like that. But I just prune some of those worst affected ones off that are browning and
Eat the healthy fruit.
Eat the healthy ones.
Good luck with that, Kerry. I have to tell you, Mark, Pam's got a sense of humour. You were talking about the armyworm and aerating the lawn.
Yeah.
And Pam's suggested that all the golfers should get out there with their shoes.
Well, true. Like, you know, there's a lot of golfers out there. They just need to increase their little spikes on the bottom of their shoes.
Let's head down to Busselton. Good afternoon, Mark.
How you going? Good. Yeah. I was just wondering, it's been a good year for the WA Christmas trees this year, and they've got a lot of seed on them on my place. What's the best way to get them, you know, to plant them and germinate them? Or there is some suckers around the trees themselves. Would they be a better option of digging them out and potting them up, or what would be the best way of doing it?
Okay. Well, make sure you're not digging up little suckers from ones in the bush. And if it's on your property, that's okay. But, you can actually take the suckers off the roots. You have to do it very carefully. That's probably the best way to do it because doing them from seed, it's going to take a long time. It takes ages to dry the seed pod. And, of course, they need a host plant because they're basically a large parasitic tree.
I mean, they grow very large.
They do eventually, yeah. So I think they're one of the world's biggest parasitic trees from memory. But, just taking the suckers off, make sure it's completely damp while you're doing it. So even though it's kind of dry this time of the year, make sure it's damp while you're doing it. Try and be as careful as you possibly can and not disturb that sucker when you're doing it. But I do it from sucker rather than from the seed.
Okay. Fiona, I think you're looking to plant mulberry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you? I I have an English mulberry, so not the stock standard one. I have the stemless English mulberry, and it's a beautiful old tree that I've got kicking along really well at the moment. So masses of fruit on it. What I want to know is, what can I plant? Can I plant anything under it? Because obviously during winter it loses all its leaves in summer, and I'm in Mingenew, it's very hot during summer, obviously. Is there something that will grow under there all the time? I lose a lot of fruit because I just can't keep up with it all when I'm picking it. But, yeah, is there some option to plant under it?
And were you thinking of something edible or just ornamental?
No, just ornamental, probably. Yeah, just something that just to cover up the gutless white sand that's under it.
Yeah. Well, I've got a weeping mulberry at home, and underneath it I have hellebores. They're called winter rose. Do you know those? They're like an English thing, and they like a bit of shade in summer because it really cooks them in summer.
Because they're English.
But they get the full sun in winter, which they love because, you know, the plant's deciduous. And all the mulberry leaves, because they mulch away underneath, I just throw a few bags of manure underneath. So hellebores are really quite a good option.
Hellebores.
Yeah. And you can even get things like they're nice little dwarf alstromerias. They're called princess lilies. They're quite good to have in little mounds underneath them. So you can get them in different colours. And they're available in your garden centre at the moment. So there's a good range of colours of alstromeria.
I think I can hear Fiona Madley making notes as you're telling her, Mark. Happy planting, Fiona. Mark's in Waikiki, and I think it's an issue with cotton. Is it cottonwood trees, Mark?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
How are you going? We've exceeded our mark limit for the day, I think.
Just ringing if your name's Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Makes it easy. I was listening to Sabrina last week, and she mentioned that cottonwood trees are probably the most invasive tree you can plant. And to our horror, we realised we've got five of them close to a pool.
Oh, dear.
And close to a deep sewage line and close to a retaining wall. So needless to say, they're going to come out. And I'm just wondering what you suggest replacing them with. Coastal conditions, we're fairly smashed by the sea breeze as soon as it gets above fence height. So we're not overly concerned about them getting above fence height, but that is a consideration. They're in a pretty, you'd say probably full sun area, and there's crushed rock all around them. So
Yes. Just bear in mind too that if you're going to hedge them, so you're kind of controlling their height, then the plants actually don't need as big a root system in order to support themselves too. So their roots are fairly good, you know, because they're very hardy trees and they can withstand coastal conditions very well. But if they're constantly pruned and hedged, then their roots aren't as big and they're not as invasive. So just bear that in mind too.
Yep.
But if you do want to replace them and you just want something to fence height, or above?
Look, if it goes a metre above fence height, that's happy days, but I don't want to go any higher, otherwise I start to compromise other people's views.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, what a lovely neighbour you are, Mark. Good on you.
Oh, that's all right. It's been done to us before, so I know how it feels.
Yeah. There's some nice skinny adenanthus that are quite suitable. So adenanthus, they call them woolly bushes. And there's some slim versions of those. And I think there's one called Pencil Perfect, and there's a couple of other compact varieties. Your local garden centre will have a selection of woolly bushes, so look out for them. They're a good choice.
Okay.
Yep.
So maybe an option might be to do every second plant or something, like take every second cottonwood out and then just put something in between to sort of hedge my bets a little bit.
Yeah, and as long as you keep trimming them, I don't think you'll have as much of a problem as if you let them just go wild.
Good luck with that, Mark. Murray's in Melville, and Murray has got a question about avocados, I think, Mark. G'day, Murray.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not a Mark, but my name starts with M.
Disappointed.
You're on point, Murray.
That could be the theme for today. yes, and I water the avos, they're mature avos, and I water them with bore water, which has got lime in it, about twice weekly. And I use a certain product. The ladies, I'm sure you know her name. So I apply that fairly regularly.
Yep.
But there's clearly a trace element problem in the leaves. and they're mature trees. And I'm just wondering what trace elements should I be applying and what frequency to get the leaves looking healthy again. So they're obviously, I don't know what the trace element deficiency is, but there's clearly something missing.
Yeah, well, normally in alkaline soils, so if you've got limey bore water and things like that, the three big ones that you get deficient are iron, manganese and magnesium. So they're all the main three ones that you get deficient in limey soils. So you can apply trace elements of those. You can even do that over the foliage, actually. Or if you've got a good mulch around the avocado, when you're putting the bore water on, a lot of the calcium is kind of trapped in the mulch as well. So that's a good way to stop it getting right down into the root system and making your soil very alkaline.
But have you got quite a bit of mulch around it, Murray?
Oh, yeah. I put bales of – I get about 40 bales of pea straw in every year.
Right, perfect. Okay.
So yeah, there's plenty of mulch.
All right. So if you use, like, slightly acidifying fertilisers, you can get things like iron sulphate and use a little bit often rather than a lot at once because you can go the other way too.
So what, every month?
Yeah, just a little bit and you can water it in. And you can water it over the foliage too, so it doesn't have to go through the roots. You can just bypass the roots.
Okay. Thank you.
No worries.
I love Jeff's message on the text line, Mark. Jeff says, I always remember Sabrina's quip for suckers. Just rip them off and don't give a sucker an even break. Just for the caller earlier.
It's true.
Teresa wants to know when she should prune her hibiscus, and she's in the Perth area. Is when's a good time to prune a hibiscus?
Well, there's different types of hibiscus. So the general average one, the Hawaiian hibiscus, you can really trim that any time of the year because they grow actively during the warm weather, so they recover very easily. You can prune them in spring going into the warm weather. But if you've got a deciduous hibiscus, like Hibiscus syriacus or one of the actual musk hibiscus, then you'd want to prune them after they finish flowering. So generally, most of the ones that you see around the place, Hawaiian hibiscus, just prune them anytime. Gosh.
Fantastic. Chris has just taken a cutting from a camellia tree to grow from, and they're looking a little bit sick, in his words, and he's wondering if it's not the right time of the year to strike the cuttings. It has been horrendously hot, depending on where you are, Chris.
Yes, really. If they become stressed at any point during that time that you're taking the cutting, then they're unlikely to recover. But if you've got a nice camellia, you can actually aerial layer them too. So
what does that mean?
So you get a branch and you make a little cut in the stem and you pack around it a bit of glad wrap and a bit of sphagnum moss or things like that, potting mix. And what happens underneath that cut, underneath the node, little roots develop into the potting mix. And once it's done that, it fills up the little, potting mix band-aid, if you like. Then you can remove it from...
And you've got new life.
And you can plant that.
Amazing propagation.
Yeah. So that's aerial layering. And you can even just put a branch and pin it to the ground as well, to put a little nick in the cut, and wait for that to develop its own roots too. So that's a good way. And you end up with a big plant straight away too. It's good.
Fantastic, Chris. I think that is entirely what you should be doing. Mark, we have run out of time, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. You can join us live on Tuesdays from 2:30 in the afternoon. Just head to abc.net.au/Perth, or you can listen to ABC Perth on DAB+. Or 7:20 a.m. on your radio. You can text your questions in on 0437 922 720, or call us, have a chat, 1300 222 720. Roots and Shoots will be back on the weekend to answer more of your gardening questions. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on your favourite podcast player and share the episodes with your friends.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.